Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Riverman.
Dean, do you ever feel like you're being watched?
Ooh, right? Some, yes.
And I mean, not by our doing podcast
it,
viewers.
Right now. Like, you know, like spooky kind of getting watched or what?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. Do you want to call it spooky?
I don't know. Right. Well, so where are you going with this?
Well, our topic today is facial recognition.
Yes.
Which is, you know, kind of a hot topic out of the world.
Yeah. Yeah,
people trying to debate whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Bad thing. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to explore a little bit of that today.
Got to get comfortable with it.
We have a great guest with us. We have Richard Carrier from CyberLink on today.
We got the pro.
They are experts in facial recognition, AI, and technology. He's going to tell us a little bit more about what they do, explain a little bit about the technology, talk about the pros, maybe dispel some of the myths and disbeliefs and address some of the issues that people have. We'll talk about the future of the technology, where it might be going.
Opportunities. Come on now.
Exactly.
There's opportunities for resellers.
We'll let
here.
Our folks know in the audience where maybe they can, you know, get in on this and dive into a little bit themselves.
So, absolutely.
All that as well as our usual recurring segments, Value to the VAR and Tech Connecting. It is time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right. So as I mentioned, our guest today is Richard Carrier from CyberLink. Richard is the Senior Vice President of Global Marketing. Richard, thank you so much for being on the show today. I want to give you a chance to start off just to kind of tell our audience a little bit about yourself, how you ended up where you are at CyberLink, maybe give a little bit about your history.
Okay. Yeah. Hi. I'm glad to be with you today. So yeah, I one of these Canadian guys who moved to the U.S. In California to run marketing for a Taiwanese company that does all sorts of cool stuff. CyberLink is a company that is known for creating video playback, video editing solutions. So in the consumer space, if you use a Windows PC in the last 25 years, you've used our software somehow. So that's where we're coming from. But we're here to talk about FaceMe, which is our newest, latest line of business. And I'll be more than happy to give you details about that.
Yeah. Great. And we're okay that you're an ex-Canadian. We love Canadians. We got lots of Canadians that come on here every day, you know.
I love that you mentioned that as if it was like the age-old story. A Canadian guy comes to California, works for a Taiwanese company. Happens every day. It's
happens
the American
every day.
Dream, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
Or the Canadian dream. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But we appreciate you being here. You know, before we do dive into the FaceMe and facial recognition software in general, you know, tell us a little bit about that aspect of CyberLink, because you're right. When I, you know, first was checking out your website, you know, in preparation for this, you know, up front, it's a lot of the video editing software, you know, the technology that has been out and about for a long time and a lot of people were using. But obviously this, you know, can be semi-related if you put some connect some dots here and there, but otherwise may not be something most people would think of. So how did CyberLink get there? You know, why did this become a technology that you invested in?
In fact, to a large extent, it is derived from what we've done in the past. CyberLink is a technology powerhouse. Our CEO, who's also founder of the company, is a technologist. He's a professor at the National Taiwan University, which is kind of the Asian MIT. So we keep inventing stuff. And one thing we've been doing for our creative software and our mobile apps the last few years is integrate augmented reality. We did develop tools that map the face, so hundreds of vectors on the face very precisely for that augmented reality or facial recognition in the context of creative video photography. So what we did, we took foundations on which we've been working for a long time. We extracted an algorithm that proved to be extremely precise. In fact, the authority in the space for measuring the top facial recognition algorithms is NIST, the National Institute for Standard and Technology. And last week, they just announced that FaceMe's algorithm is the number one commercializable. So basically, outside of five companies based in China, which for all sorts of reasons cannot easily commercialize their products outside of their home country, we're number one. So for companies in the US, anyone looking for facial recognition, we're it. And we keep improving the algorithm. We keep adding features, and I'll get into as much details as you want. Like recognizing someone, like any of us here in a live video stream with data on file is one aspect of facial recognition, but there's a whole lot more when it comes to very helpful features that have nothing to do with some of the stories that we hear in the news that make us wonder, like, why are we even talking about that?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And before we get into the product and facial recognition, I'm gonna add a little bit more to what Richard was saying there as far as the company is concerned, because I think it's important. You know, CyberLink is a part of our Tech Connect program. They've been a member. What we like about them, and one of the reasons why I think that they're awesome, of course, they have great product. And as you just heard Richard saying, leading technology, the company itself is awesome. They're flexible. They're agile when it comes to working with resellers, understanding what the solutions are. They understand that a lot of what's going on in the marketplace today is amorphic in the sense that, you know, there's all kinds of applications that are now starting to use facial recognition. They're good at doing that. They're good at working with resellers. Again, flexibility, agile, not that you might not find in some of these other companies that are maybe a little bit bigger and not fully focused on facial recognition. So anyway, I know he won't toot his own horn like that, but they're really awesome at that. So,
well, that's the reason why he's here. I mean,
there we go.
We don't invite people on just from any company,
right?
You know?
Yeah, like, right. Yeah, we're gonna, bringing value here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, then, you know, Richard, you kind of mentioned, like, you know, maybe getting a little bit more into some of the details. So tell us a little bit more for maybe, you know, the layman who gets the concept of facial recognition. Like, I get that it's something that's supposed to be able to look at my face and tell you who I am. I mean,
right.
That's the literal definition of it. But maybe, you know, go behind the scenes a little bit and explain a little bit more about how the technology works, especially maybe as it might relate to some of our resellers and the tech and the hardware that they usually work with, how your software might integrate with that, and maybe also get into some use cases.
Yeah, I'll do all that. So first, how does facial recognition technology work? What we do is that from a picture or a video stream, from an image, we measure hundreds of vectors on someone's face, and every person has very unique set of vectors. So that's something we do. We capture that, and we associate it in a case where, let's say, John Dean, you authorize me as, let's say, a retail chain to add your face to your loyalty account. Then all I have is a highly encrypted tiny file of like 1 kilobyte that has all these codes for vectors on your face. So I don't even have a picture of, I don't even need a picture of your face or anything. So already right there, it takes away a lot of things. People are worried, like, people are going to reuse my face, steal my identity. So good facial recognition solutions work like ours. It also works, you asked me about the devices, it works at the edge, which means that for security reasons, cost of computing, it can run very well on a mobile device, on a smartphone. It can run on a PC if it's something like in a small business, any IoT device. So I'll get into use cases, talk about health kiosks, or it can run on monitor people on hundreds of IP cameras in a big facility, industrial facility, running on a couple of powerful workstations. So that's how it works. So from that capture of vectors that you have on file, and if you want to be very precise, because we're talking already of a level of precision of 99.7% for our algorithm, which is whenever you look at the camera, there's a 99.7% chance that immediately you are recognized and as the right person. And there's only one chance in a million that they would recognize somebody. They say, okay, I recognize someone, but the algorithm makes a mistake. So that's extremely precise. Like, people say, oh, I'm worried about privacy by giving my face away. What we're saying is that you don't have to, your face won't be on the database, number one, and number two, in terms of precision, to protect yourself. Like 99.7%, one chance in a million of the system failing, It's better than certainly than a four-digit PIN or a password made of your date of birth or the name of your pet. Even iris recognition, there's a risk of 1 in 10,000 of a false recognition. Finger reading, the same thing, we're at 1 in 1,000,000. So when you put all that, you have something that's extremely secure, something that runs, like for the VARs, the resellers, depending on the use case, depending on all sorts of factors, the precision you need. Do you have only one person at a time, or you want to monitor 100 people? Like, it runs on any kind of device, from very light, low power device, like let's say a smart lock, to powerful workstations. Our solution as an SDK, as a software development kit, runs on Windows, iOS, Linux, Android. So it can be retrofitted into other solutions. We also have a complete software solution. So software development kit might be something scary to some of the VARs and resellers. But what I'm saying is, in fact, True Blue Star, we have solutions called FaceMe Security to monitor security in a facility, and FaceMe Health to monitor elevated body temperature, making sure people wear masks, recognize people even if they have a mask. And these are software that all you have to do is buy it, not to plug Blue Star, but buy it from Blue Star, install it on a PC, plug a camera. And it's barely more complicated than installing Microsoft Office on a PC and you go. So these are the kinds of things that that our solution can do at a high level. So I can talk about more use cases, but I will pause because I'm giving you information at once.
From a biometric standpoint, going back, and I didn't know this, that you're capturing 100 vector points. And I think that's really important to drive home here, the fact that you're not sharing the image itself. You're just more interested in the vector data points. When you compare it to other biometrics, I get it now why facial recognition is starting to get such a run, if you will. Like fingerprinting, I believe, you really only need about 20 points of data, so you're not getting maybe as accurate. Is that right, Richard? Better than I. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Plus, there are other issues with fingerprints. You have dirt that can happen. People would say it's relatively easy to spoof fingerprints. I'm not an expert, but we've all watched these spy movies. Facial recognition, good solutions, ours included, we detect attempt to spoof the camera. So if you have a photo of someone, automatically, this thing's never gonna work. If you have a video, let's say you play a video of Dean in front of his smart lock, still, it's not going to work because our technology will identify, like, through all sorts of things that, no, this is not real. So add all this together, and I cannot say it enough, that's the safest way that exists right now to protect anything, whether it's your house, whether it's your data, whether it's access to your bank account, whether it's unlocking a POS system at a retail store, or clocking in and out the employees at a restaurant.
Yeah. And not to get too geeky on it, but you're vectoring 3D, right? You're going, yeah, all right. You're dimensionally vectoring a face.
Sure. Exactly. And there's enough vectors. I briefly touched on the fact that we can identify somebody even if they're wearing a mask, which is highly relevant now and will remain highly relevant in many places. Just think of hospitals. Just through the vectors on the nose bridge, around the eyes, we have enough data that, the precision accuracy will go down from 99.7% to maybe 95%, which means that one out of 20 attempts, maybe you have to, just like you do with your phone, you have to, go start
it. Try again. Right.
You're wearing a mask that's covering most of your face. So so in that sense, that's how it works. And that's the importance of having all these vectors that we measure.
Well, I definitely know my phone can't pick me up with my mask on at this
point. No, not yet. Right. Yeah.
But to be fair, who was planning for that? Well, obviously you guys were. Figured it out. Which,
that's their day job.
Yeah. I was very impressed when I was looking through your website and I saw the stuff about the mask recognition. And I think my favorite part of it was, because one of my pet peeves during this whole thing is the person that wears the mask, under their nose or on their chin. And I love that it would even, could even set off alarms saying, hey, you're not wearing your mask right. Like yeah, that's right. I think that's fantastic.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And we trained a model to identify the right types of masks, like masks that are acceptable. Like you cannot just have a scarf around your face or put your hand. It's not going to work. So, yeah, but that's the thing. That's where technology is today, using AI, using deep learning for the model, which is also something I should have mentioned. Like the, as I said, the processing, everything happens at the edge on any device. You don't need that device to be connected to a network or the internet, but we create a database, so the model, and this uses artificial intelligence where we teach the model how to recognize people. And depending on the level of precision that you need, we have several models. So some that would fit on a workstation, but it could protect Fort Knox, versus something that just makes sure that to access your home, it recognizes like the family members, which would fit inside a doorknob. So we can adapt the model, but that thing happens on the web. Then we bring the model, that database file, together with the little software. We bring that to any device. So talk about security again. If you're a one location thing, or in banking computers are not allowed to be connected to the World Wide Web. So they have their own private networks, but our solution would work perfectly there.
Yeah. Awesome. And let's keep going down some of those use cases a little bit more. And I was thinking about some marketplaces, for the resellers that are listening in here. I want to make sure, because I'm seeing a lot of opportunity across the spectrum of potential resellers that are listening here today. Some of the ones I was reading up on, Richard, and I just got a couple of them, like to get your commentary on them, combating crime, facial recognition being used by government entities to help facilitate, if you will, a crime, as it relates to a lot of things in there, but
the prevention of a crime.
I'm sorry, the prevention, yeah, not the creation thereof, but yes, exactly. Another one you've already touched on a little bit, but healthcare is starting to use facial recognition for accuracy, even when it gets down to drug administration, because you want to make sure that the pain management and all that's being managed correctly, and then of course. In a wheelhouse of a lot of our resellers in the retail sector, we're seeing facial recognition being used to improve the customer experience, whether it's loyalty programs or whether it's just getting a better understanding of what's happening in the retail space. I know the retail space has been hit really hard, but we're going to get back to some normality here in somewhere in the future, and people are going to start going back to the store. So anyway, those are just three that I was thinking of. But do you agree there, or what are some areas that you see some opportunities for our resellers here?
Yeah, there's like all of the above, but I would say to be like, if somebody, one of your resellers is watching the show now and they say, I want to start selling facial recognition solution, the most immediate use case, and very often, is pure security, so access control. Like almost every business, no matter their size, now they have cameras at the entrances, in the store, outside, and adding solution like FaceMe Security, which is a software that you just literally connect the IP cameras that are already there to your software, then this thing will help you identify employees, so it could unlock doors for them, plug them in, plug them out. If you have member of loyalty programs, VIPs, will identify them right away, as long as they opted in. Obviously, this is not something that you would want to do. Or if you have a undesirable person, somebody who's on a block list, shoplifter or anything, like this is Walmart is using that already. So you can already have that in the solution. And this is something easy to sell, easy to deploy. There's immediate value to it. So that's a use case, and it's very broad. Like it can be deployed in a small shop all the way to a international chain of big stores. And so that I would say, so that's one that's immediate. Another one that's immediate, with COVID and through the transition that we will see over the next year, maybe two, is health kiosks with a couple of partners already, as well as our software solution, FaceMe Health. you can monitor like people before you give them access anywhere, whether it's a shop, a restaurant, an office building, a plant. So it will make sure, like if it's an employee, like it recognizes the person, it will check that they wear a mask, they don't have elevated body temperature. One of our partners with their kiosks, they even ask people to answer a couple of questions about their health by nodding or shaking their head. Facial recognition enables that. And in the end, they have to put their hands underneath a dispenser of disinfectant. So once they do that, which takes about 15 seconds, then they're granted access. So that's something that it's a plug-and-play solution that can be resold pretty easily. So these are, I would say, immediate use cases. But Dean, you mentioned retail. How can we improve the user experience? How to get data? That's a very interesting one. Like one of the basic use cases could be just to anonymously aggregate data about the demographics, who's walking in which part of the store. So our solution can detect with high level of precision gender of people, their age within a range of 5 years with precision, and also the mood, the emotions they have when they look at the camera. And again, like if you aggregate data, it following a normal distribution, this gives you very precise statistics. And so that's zero that any retailer, any organization that deals with visitors, could be hospitals, it can be like, name it, they like that data. But then you take it one stage further, like you connect that to a smart digital signage. So you can personalize, adjust what is displayed based on who's looking at it. Now, a step further, we talked about loyalty programs. So John, Dean, you are a member of, let's say, Starbucks loyalty program, like I think 60-something percent of their customers. Instead of finding your phone, finding your password so you can scan the code, which never works for me, they recognize you immediately. They can give you your favorite beverage for payment. They recognize your face. It's better than a credit card. So do all that in a very streamlined way. And this can then you bring it to one more step, like a self-service kiosks, as you start seeing more and more in fast food restaurants, some stores. Then same thing, it will recognize based on your preferences, oh, you're a loyalty member, we have that special deal for you today. This is what you normally order for food. So these are all things, and I could go on and on just for retail alone, that we start to see, and we'll see more and more. So I would say these are some of the most immediate ones.
Yeah,
I can touch just on a couple more. I think financial services industry is a big deal. And identity theft and fraud is extremely costly. Add to that all sorts of regulations for anti-money laundering and things. So you need to do like authentication, make sure you match the person with their official ID. So we can do that. Like it can be done remotely during COVID and in the future, people don't want to go to a branch of their bank or insurance company anymore. So on an app on your phone, you could scan your driver's license or passport or whatever, take a live picture, and it does the match in a way that's at least as good as a human being comparing you with a card. And this can be applied to any kind of transaction, whether it's an ATM, it's managing your banking remotely, applying for insurance, dealing with your brokerage account. So these are things that we're starting to see appearing everywhere. So I would say, like, these are not the only use cases. I mean,
all right.
You've seen the global entry kiosks in airports. You've seen all sorts of things. But yeah, that's kind of some of the areas where we're having customers where I think the resellers and VARs who work with Blue Star have their customers. And it also stays away from some of the... The use cases that are worrying people, which are more around mass surveillance and the public sector. Like these are all use cases that are very important, very relevant, and happen in a private setting. So there's no concern from users or anyone.
I love I love a technology that feels futuristic, where you can kind of say, well, the future's now. It's here.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like something we would normally be here. Talking about as, right. Hey, imagine the future being able to walk into Starbucks and they, you know, it's like,
and they already know
it's
who
like
it is.
Norm in Cheers. And you're right. Like, hey, Dean, you want your double latte?
Yes.
I don't drink coffee. I don't know what,
whatever
that right. stuff yeah. is. So yeah. I think that stuff's fascinating. Well, you know, I do kind of want to segue then a little bit to those concerns because you briefly mentioned mm-hmm. them. And I feel like we've kind of touched on a lot of this stuff already. You know, the privacy aspect, you mentioned the idea of the vectors, you know, mm-hmm. that you're storing basically lines of code, not really someone's face or identity, which, as an aside and a little joke here, Valentine's Day is coming up.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe if you want to impress your loved one,
mm-hmm.
maybe instead of just the standard, like, oh, you have beautiful eyes, like, you have the most amazing set of vectors I've ever seen.
I love you tying it in like that. That's awesome.
Just a little PSA.
Your vectors,
for our audience,
honey. Your vectors. Yeah.
They might take it the wrong way. You might have to show them this podcast to explain. Yeah, but
all good.
Appreciate that.
Right.
So, you know, when we get into these concerns about facial recognition, I feel like anytime this technology comes up in the news, it's almost always about the downsides, the potential negatives.
Yeah. Big brother watching,
yeah.
you know.
You hear about the mass surveillance thing. You've heard about some companies that maybe have sold some of their, you know, data mm-hmm. to government or law enforcement agencies. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, I didn't sign up for that necessarily.
Right.
You know, I was just walking down the street and suddenly I'm now in a database somewhere.
Right.
You know, concerns about accuracy. And it sounds like you've kind of addressed a lot of those. I mean, mm-hmm. in my mind, a one in a million is
pretty small.
Yeah, that's pretty small. I think, you know, there's a lot of other things people take chances on that aren't as concerning.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Bias is one that I've heard about too. You know, people of color in particular mentioned there's sometimes a bigger chance of inaccurate readings than there have been with white people. Regulation, you know, like, is this, should we be regulating this technology in some way? Who should actually have access to this technology?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how is it being stored? Again, I think we've kind of touched on a little bit of this, but Richard, from your perspective, because I can almost guarantee that you hear about these things every day, probably in tune with the news reports, you probably get questions about this from customers. How do you mm-hmm. address these kind of concerns when they come up? You know, what's your talking points beyond what we've already mentioned?
Okay. I mean, there's a couple of angles. One is technology. I'll get to that in a moment. But there's another one that's just purely just ethics and common business sense, I would say. And and by the way, we added a statement of human rights on our CyberLink website with facial recognition to state a very clear position that we don't endorse anything that involves looking at people without them knowing about it. Storing and using and reusing people's pictures unless they clearly opted in to do it for that specific usage. So we don't do any of that, and we would never willfully associate ourselves with any company that does that. Like, we cannot control everything that the customers do once they buy it, but that's a very clear position mm-hmm. for us. Another aspect, you touched on it, should it be regulated? Absolutely. In the US, you have all sorts of complexities because you have laws and regulations at the federal, state, county, city level. It's all over the place and it varies a lot. So that's why you hear a lot about it, because it's discussed. Some states, like I think Oregon, came up with a relatively comprehensive framework around facial recognition, but that's the only state that has done that so far. So, you know, once there is a clear legal framework around facial recognition in the public domain out there, I think it will help companies like us, because right now we don't want to take risks where things don't make sense. And not only that, businesses who are in some of these cities that are banning it, even though it's banned in the public domain, not necessarily inside their company or shop, it raises questions. So anyway, so that's kind of the angle that has nothing to do with the technology itself. Now, about the bias, there are some real concerns. And you mentioned like skin complexion. If the camera captures images in a very dark place, people with darker skins, it's not going to be as precise. And at the extreme it won't recognize people for obvious reason. And at that point, no matter what's their skin complexion. The other way around, people don't talk about that, but let's say you're in a place that's very brightly lit by outdoor sun, then people with very fair skin complexion will be harder to recognize. It's just limitations of lighting. So when we work with our customers, and I'm sure some of the partners who work with Blue Star are know better than even we do about cameras and lighting, you need to create the right condition. So if you want to use facial recognition at an ATM, you should be able to, or the entrance of an office building, you should be able to set up the camera, the right camera, the right place with the right lighting. And we can help. We help our customers do that. So that's one thing. Another thing with technology, because of our history in video and photo image treatment and enhancements, we have a set of patented technologies that we call True Theater that enhance lighting, sharpen images, so basically upscale images. So with that alone, we go get about 10% added precision accuracy than a normal solution for facial recognition. So it kind of compensates for it. So these are the kinds of things. And we talked about masks earlier. Several solutions just cannot precisely identify people wearing masks. And that's something NIST is also measuring. So these are the things from the technological side that can be addressed within certain limits. And the good algorithms, ours included, the bias is minimized. It cannot completely disappear, but it is minimized. And as long as it still maintains a level of precision that is very high, it's not problematic. Like, but of course, like you say, like police would use that to identify people, criminals. I'm not a cop and it's not our business, but I would like to believe that when they identify people, they use more than, like they cross-reference things. So they don't just rely on one source. So while facial recognition can be very helpful, it cannot be the only way. Like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, I very much appreciate one that that you have this insight into these particular questions and have already figured out how to answer them. And I also appreciate that as a tech company with that's working in a technology and in a space that is still very much on the edge, is growing, is not as widespread as it could be, and is, you know, still seen as somewhat futuristic in some ways. I love mm-hmm. that you've already got these ideas in your head of like, hey, this human rights, you know, declaration, and we're already thinking ahead about this stuff. We're already, you know, answering these questions and making ethical stands on about this before someone comes along and regulates you and tells you that you have to. I always appreciate a company that thinks ahead, especially when you get to this kind of technology that is
right. still cutting edge.
Yeah, that's still very cutting edge and is not as rampant yet. And, you know, there's a lot of different players out there that might be trying stuff out. And I appreciate that you're one that's willing to get out in front of these issues.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and one reason for that, obviously, we like to believe we're an ethical company. We also work very closely with some of the leaders in the space for technology, for hardware, for the big chipset manufacturers, no need to name them, you know, all the names. And these companies, in some cases, we're very close strategic partners to optimize the solution. They use us to illustrate how their technology can embed facial recognition. So if we did not follow standards that are as stringent as they do, they would not do business with us. So that's just part of the nature of what we're doing. But that's very important.
Yeah, very cool. So let's talk a little bit about the future here. I think we've kind of touched on this a little bit. And there's a running gag on the podcast we've had since almost the beginning about the film Minority Report. I don't know if you're familiar with this Steven Spielberg, Tom Cruise movie. I figure if you're in this world, you kind of had to have come across it at some point. But, you know, one of the recurring, you know, gags, if you will, almost in the movie is that, you know, as he's walking through a shopping mall a couple times, it's scanning his, now granted, it's not facial recognition, it's more retinal scans for his eyes, scanning his eyes and, you know, presenting ads that are directly related to him. Like, you know, hey, Mr. Anderton, have you, you know, did you like that shirt that you bought last time? You know, have you thought about a getaway vacation to here? And you mentioned that already, this idea of, you know, of retail tech that can, you know, identify you and address you with displays, you know, specifically advertised to you. and who you are, what you've maybe purchased in the past. So getting beyond that, are there any other interesting, like, you know, technology from the, you know, or thoughts from the future of this technology, or maybe other presentations you've seen in the media, spy films and whatnot, as you mentioned, that you think are actually maybe where this is going, or that are just flat out fiction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say reality, where we see the technology evolving, it's going to be a bit boring, but it's just the fact that AI chipsets, the hardware that is needed to run facial recognition, everything around that solution, the costs are going down very quickly. The performance is increasing very quickly, which enables very precise facial recognition on a very small device. So when you have that, then what we're going to see more and more is this integration of facial recognition in the Internet of Things. And we refer to the AIoT, so artificial intelligence of things, but this is where you're going to see it more and more. Is it going to be creepy use cases? If it's in the public domain, trust legislation will handle that. If it's in the private domain, if your store does something that creeps out customers, they're not going to be in business very long, or whoever had this not so brilliant idea won't keep their job very long. So in that sense, I'm not too worried that you will see Minority Report things left and right, just like we don't see flying cars everywhere, although that was the future. And the reason is not that you cannot make flying cars. They keep introducing them every year at CES, but can you imagine a bunch of people can barely drive on a two-dimensional plan, imagine flying around. So that's why it's not happening. So I, in that sense, I think the future is rather bright, where you'll start seeing more and more ways to protect everything around you and automate a lot of use cases, where nowadays you need to scan codes with your phone, you need to get it out of your pocket, or you have to use a key or a card or whatnot. I think it's just going to be streamlined everywhere. Like, automotive companies are working with us to automate, like customize, like when you're in a car, depending who's sitting in the driver's seat, it will customize everything from the radio station temperature to the seat position. This is the future, but this is the future that's being developed now. So it's not crazy future.
That's a really nice pragmatic answer to that. I think he's right. I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head across the board, in the sense that it's a pragmatic technology. Of course, we all like things that make our life a little bit more efficient. He already talked about it on the very front end. This is, you know, primarily a security play. So, you know, it's making it more secure, making people feel more comfortable. So as a society, as we get more comfortable with facial recognition and the fact that, which people are, if you own an Apple product, I mean, you're already kind of getting into that sense. We need the government and the regulation to be in place to protect everybody's data and stuff like that. And I think that'll happen. But yeah, really practical answer to that.
I agree.
And again, lots of opportunity there.
I like the idea of a technology that the future is kind of boring, but still bright.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay to acknowledge that, like, hey, this isn't going to be, you know, it's not going to be James Bond. It's not going to be Minority Report. It's not going to be, you know, the whole world changes around you because you get your face scanned, or, you know, you suddenly find yourself in dangerous situations. No, it's just useful, practical technology that will benefit us in our day-to-day life. That's important.
How rich are we? You know, we're talking about how practical facial recognition, whereas just, 20 years ago, we would have been talking.
Well, I mean, complete science fiction stuff wasn't even a thing then.
Right.
I mean, our phones weren't even a thing then.
Good stuff.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for this conversation. Before we wrap up and get on to our recurring segments, I want to first of all mention that if you've liked what you've heard and you're interested in learning more about FaceMe and facial recognition technology, go to cyberlink.com/FaceMe. That's where you can find out about their particular product. And hey, you know, if you're interested in selling this, you want to get in on this, reach out to your Blue Star rep, your Blue Star BDM. They will be happy to, you know, connect you with folks like Richard at CyberLink and talk to you a little bit more about this technology and some of the hardware that we sell.
Just us in general, because we can connect you. I mean, Blue Star is a partner of CyberLink. So yeah, exactly. We can connect the dots there.
Exactly. As always, I want to thank our sponsors. That is Elo, Epson, Honeywell, and Zebra. They are our 2021 Tech Connect podcast sponsors. We appreciate your support. We could not do this without you. And hey, since Dean mentioned, if you do want to connect with us, if you want to, you know, ask us some questions about this, tell us a little bit about your experience with facial recognition software, or get you in touch with Richard and his company, you can reach us on Twitter at TechConnectPod. You can also email us TechConnect@BlueStarInc.com. All right, we're going to wrap up with our same segments that we do every week, which is our value to the VAR is where we're going to start.
Yeah.
And this is where we usually kind of wrap up our conversation, you know, with a message to our VAR audience. I feel like we've done quite a bit of that throughout this episode already of, you know,
how
how they can get in on this. But the particular question, you know, Richard, for you and for CyberLink as a company is, you know, how does your company operate in the reseller channel? You know, it's an interesting channel. You know, this is a business that if you're outside of it, you may not quite get it how it works. And companies like yours, I feel like, understand the value of what Blue Star does, what our vendors do, what our reseller partners do. So how do you work in the channel and what does your business model look like?
Yeah. So, yeah, we work with distributors, Blue Star. First I'm with you now, but you are our favorite value-added distributor, which you do a whole lot more. So there's no questions. And then contact the resellers. We work also with other distributors, make sure we cover the market. Some of our solutions are bundled with OEM products, so you can buy them through their channel. But generally speaking, for your audience, I would say just go to your Blue Star rep. There's a lot of information about FaceMe on the Blue Star website. We can engage about the products, the solution. We have the software solutions that are ready, and very soon will be offered as bundles with computers and cameras directly from Blue Star for security and for health solutions. So these are very easy thing to buy and resell. We have our SDK, our software development kit, also available through Blue Star. And this is for organizations who want to, like for example, that build IoT-based devices, they want to embed something customized. We work with them to understand the SDK, the documentation. And then what I would say, anyone, I'm sure lots of resellers and VARs are receiving questions from their customers about facial recognition, specifically to their needs. And we have tons of resources on our website, so I would encourage them to just go check it out. We've been, from our origins, our founder was an academic. We have a series of, a growing series of articles that cover pretty much everything about facial recognition, from the technology to the use cases to the application in top verticals and industries. So I would just encourage resellers, go to our website, get these articles, share them with your customers, and we can do that. And for the rest, the business model, which is keep for last the most important aspect, we're very flexible. Whether we can sell our solution as a perpetual license, as an annual subscription, depending on the deployment, the subscription can be tied to the number of devices, of cameras, of servers, of locations. So we try to be flexible to the end users and the resellers' business model. Most cases, we go for this annual recurring license, which creates a nice revenue stream for resellers and a good reason to re-engage with their customers every year. And I think it fits also very well what we see more and more for hardware, just like you do at Blue Star, where you can take hardware solutions and have a revenue stream that is based on annual payments. So that's how we work. Try to be very keep it very simple and workable.
Yeah, very, really good stuff. I mean, in my mind, the value to the VAR, the action plan here is pretty straightforward. And I think I'll just reiterate lots of opportunity here. Step number one is you got to understand the technology. Richard just gave you a path. He's got the information. They've got the resources at hand so that you can understand the technology. But as a reseller, if you don't, you know, that's kind of step number one is you got to become familiar with the technology, some of the ins and outs. And look, most of our resellers are all techie people. They probably already know some level of what's going on. You get a little bit deeper, a little bit more granular in there. Number two, understand the solutions that are already available. As Richard just said, we have in-a-box solutions that already can come out of the box and you could take to market today. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, and what I would say, and also understand the SDK. You know, a lot of our resellers have programmers on staff. They can become knowledgeable with that SDK so that they can then, you know, start demoing, start figuring out ways that you can integrate it. Because the third thing on my list of action is probe your current customer base. As we've been talking about in this pandemic, you know, everybody's looking for opportunities, and one of the best opportunities is to go after customers that already know who you are and probe for additional opportunities. What better opportunity here than what facial recognition through FaceMe can bring to the table? You can probe for these types of solutions that maybe weren't on your radar at all. You are a POS reseller and you're darn good at that. Great. Hey, by the way, I've got this facial recognition that we can help you with, you know, automating who's coming into your store. You're from the back of the house to your employees to the front of house and getting a better, just so many opportunities there. You got to understand the technology, understand the solutions that are out there. Probe your customers. A couple more points. Got to start partnering up with the right people. I mean, FaceMe on the software side, I hope people understand now that's kind of a no-brainer. There's some new hardware manufacturers that you might have to become knowledgeable with, Advantech, and just some other camera makers out there. Easy, we can help you there. And then the last thing I'll say is develop and test these solutions. That's a great way. I know a lot of resellers understand that, but man, just start playing in the sandbox. get in there, get elbow deep into the technology, figure out a customer that you can develop a one particular solution, take it to market, boom, suddenly you're in the facial recognition market. And I think as we've been talking about here, the play is going to be on the private side and using it to make it life more efficient and more secure. That's where the play is going to be, and there's going to be a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, definitely. I don't really have anything to add to all that. I thought that was all fantastic.
We nailed it.
Yeah.
And way to go, Richard.
I appreciate it, Richard, that you mentioned like the content stuff that you have on your website, where, you know, articles and stories and stuff people can dive in. As a marketing guy, as a content marketing guy, obviously, right. I always appreciate any kind of company that's willing to kind of give that kind of background information and give informative and educational material.
On top of that, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but Dean, you mentioned something interesting about trying. We do offer trial versions of our solutions, so any reseller can experiment with that at no cost initially. After that, we have, at some point, if somebody trial for 2 years, but anyway, people can have a free trial. We take a pretty high-touch approach, so we can support you, we can do demos. These are all things that want to make sure that we provide everything that that you need.
This is the definition of the value to the VAR.
There you go.
Segment exists just for this kind of conversation.
Yeah.
Very good. Let's wrap things up with our favorite fun segment of each week, which is What's Tech Connecting with Us.
Yep.
This is where we talk a little bit about, you know, a piece of technology, maybe a software, something cool, innovation we've been reading about in the news, just something that's caught our eye and our attention right now. So, Richard, I'll let you start. What is Tech Connecting with you right now?
Oh, yeah. It was my birthday recently. One of my good friends gave me a coffee mug called Ember that is the most sophisticated over-engineered, probably the most expensive coffee mug in the world, but it connects to an app on the smartphone. You can remotely control the temperature of your beverage. It will keep your beverage at a constant temperature. It gives you ideal suggestions. It's fine. Since I've had it, I'm using it every day. Talk about the technology that has changed my life without even thinking it would.
It's the easy things, right? Yep. I got two questions for you on that one, Richard. Is it dishwasher safe? Can you throw it in the dishwasher?
I don't know. I haven't tried it.
Okay.
You have, I don't know, like now with my thing, but yeah, you have like the
Yeah.
Electric contacts. I wouldn't do that.
You're putting it on a base. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, there's a base to recharge it.
Gotcha.
Easy to clean. Like, I suspect it was probably developed in the space station or something. Like, the materials are very, it feels very high tech. It's not quite fine china, metal, or plastic. I'm not sure what it is, but it's pretty impressive.
I like it. Well, my other question was, does it power? Or how do you power it? But you answered that. I love this because there's nothing. I only have coffee in the morning, but I'm with you. It's a game. You know, how long do I have until this gets so cold that I won't drink it anymore? Because for me, I got to drink hot coffee or at least warm coffee. So I'm liking that one.
It is a dangerous game of like, how long do you wait before it's cool enough to drink, but do you wait too long?
Yep.
And then suddenly you're halfway through and you're like, yeah, this is garbage.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. So I've been using Yetis and stuff like that. And there's some, I got to figure out what the technology is in these things that keeps it either warm or cold. Cause I don't know. There's some voodoo going on in there as well, but that one's really voodoo. Practical.
Team, we're men of science. Come on. Not voodoo.
It's not voodoo. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, Dean, what's tech connecting with you right now?
All right. Well, I got an interesting one. It's not technology related at all, but have you been hearing in the news, and this is just within the last couple of days, the GameStop, you know, the company GameStop and the stock run up that's happening. Okay. So I was kind of drilling in a little bit and why that's all happening. There's all kinds of angles on this one, but you know, apparently if you don't know, but the stock buying is being run up by a bunch of folks that are
on Reddit.
These are day traders. So a couple things. During this pandemic, apparently people have too much time on their hands. So day trading has like gone through the roof. There's so many day traders right now because people are bored, just sitting around their computers all day long. They got their little day trading app going on over here. I get it. I never was a day trader, but I used to be into trading, and so I get the whole allure to it. But apparently they all got online and Reddit, and they're going to run up the stock price so that they can beat Wall Street, well, pummel Wall Street by all the people that have shorted the
stock. Kill all these hedge fund people.
And I don't want to get into what shorting is and all that kind of good stuff. It gets really complicated and all that good stuff. But the overall idea here is that they're trying to pummel Wall Street via a coordinated kind of attack through day trading. Yeah. And it's like, I just sat back and thought about this. I'm like, oh man, there's a lot wrong in here. I mean, you know, everything from everybody's got their, a lot of people have their 401ks and stuff like that related to the stock market. Now you got a group of people that are gaming the system. And where does this go? And I know the SEC is probably all over it. And yes, it's illegal to a certain degree what they're doing and blah, 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 blah. But isn't it fascinating?
It is. And it's opening up this conversation that I've heard people have for a while that I don't know which side I really fall on, which is, does the stock market even matter?
What do you mean?
If you can just go in there and just like, just
if
a bunch of people just hanging online can decide, hey, we're going to jack up GameStop's, GameStop stock today.
Right.
And just go do this thing.
That's a problem.
Does it make any sense? Like, is it a reliable economic or financial indicator when just anybody can just do this?
Well, that's why I'm saying that, you know, on that angle, if you want to go down that road, we got to figure that out because there's issues there. Now, the SEC is in place, and I'm sure that things will start coming about. I mean, there are rules in place that you can't do some of the stuff that they're doing. But at the end of the road, they're doing it, and they're doing it. The activity that they've already done has netted a $5 billion loss on Wall Street. So this is not little stuff, you know, to your point. This is big stuff that's going on here. It's like, what is going on? You got a bunch of rogue day traders out there all coordinating, buying up the stock. If I was at GameStop, I'd be like, you know, like a CEO over there. I'd be like, do I sell my stock now? What do I do?
Well, didn't they even do it with Blockbuster, a company that doesn't technically even exist anymore?
They're not even,
They're doing AMC. I know there's a couple other companies.
AMC. There's a couple on the target list that they're going to go after where it's just, I don't know, man. There's something in there. But now I get why there's all this buzz about why I was wondering, why am I seeing GameStop in the news? What the hell is going on here?
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend like I understand anything about the stock market other than I just, you know, my 401k seems to get better and that's all that matters to me. But
well, it's because day traders are running up your stock price.
Hopefully the Vance Eaton portfolio, whatever it is I'm in, has got some GameStop stocks in it. Maybe I can cash out early on my 401k and retire, you know, so.
I'm laughing, but there's a lot of serious stuff around it. Anyway, what's tech connecting with you?
Very interesting. For me, I'm going to throw out Recipe Box Services.
Okay.
Companies like HelloFresh,
Blue Apron,
Sunbasket, Freshly, all these companies.
Okay.
My wife and I decided to start trying one of these out a few months back.
Dipping your toe.
About 2 months ago. I'm a big cook. You know, I like to cook.
Right.
I love to do the cooking in the house. And, you know, in these pandemic days, I think more people have been staying home and cooking, mm-hmm. you know, when you're not wanting to go to restaurants, people aren't going out as much, you don't want to spend as much money either. So we tried out Blue Apron first, you know, where you get that box once a week, you know, you get a mm-hmm. box and you can tailor it to however you want. You can have, you know, three or four recipes. It can be recipes for two, for four, whatever right. your family size is. And they give you all the instructions. You might need to use like a few things you've got at home, like olive oil, salt and pepper. But otherwise, they give you everything you need, all the right portions. I know this sounds like an advertisement, but I just think it's been fun and it's been fascinating. It's helped me find a lot of cool new recipes to try out, like that I replicate myself. Mm-hmm. They give you all the details and I just go out and I'm like, okay, this stuff I can do myself. Like I may not get something quite as farm fresh as what they sent me, but you know, there's a lot of stuff I've been able to replicate and try out.
Yeah.
But what's funny is we reached a point where with Blue Apron, we're like, well, some of these recipes are okay. Some weeks we want to skip. We want to get back to our own stuff. Well, then I found a deal from HelloFresh came in yesterday. So I was like, I'm just going to just play the field here with these.
Right. Yeah.
And I've got next week, I have Blue Aprons off and I got HelloFresh coming instead. We're going to try both of them out for a little bit, see what we like. And really, like, you know, the pricing is not bad. But I want to say, depending on the service, it can be anywhere from like $40 to $60 for a box of 3 to 4 meals, depending on how
much. Gosh, that's not bad at all. Yeah.
When you think about, you know, if you especially if you have like a family and you go and buy, you know, a order out from somewhere,
sure, sure.
that can run up a $100 tab in no easily. Time.
Yeah, $60 is no
for
problem.
For one meal, let right. alone yeah. two or three. Yeah. So it's just been fun. And of course, there's an app experience around it. That's also the
okay.
thing. You know, there's all a nice right. app you can download and, you know, play around with the menu, pick what you want.
Yeah.
You can customize, you can give ratings, you can.
Well, we've been thinking about doing that ourselves at the Reverman household, but we haven't dove
in. If you decide
yet.
To, let me know because I can give, like, you know,
some tips.
I can give, like, yeah, little coupon codes.
Oh,
or
right.
Too.
Yeah. And then you get like $5 off your
We're
next
suddenly going to get all these emails at Tech Connected Blue Star and go, like, hey, John. Don't really know much about the podcast, but I'd like one of those coupon codes for Blue Apron.
Well, I do want to report back on which one you think is better, if any, because oh, well. I had a family member recently on Facebook, you know, put out the call. Hey, we're considering just that.
Right.
Who knows what? Who do you recommend? And man, just, you know, 40 posts yeah. immediately about people recommending. And what I found out about is, yes, there's those national ones, but did you know there's a lot of local ones
oh, yeah.
too? There's
yeah.
a lot of local chefs yeah. that will do just that.
Yep.
And you can subscribe. So there's even a local angle if you want to get that micro on it,
yeah.
On stuff like that. So we're intrigued by it as well. We haven't gone there yet. So
it's such a smart, simple concept.
Right.
And I think it's one of those things that probably is helping out a lot of people who may be people that
oh,
don't
sure.
have the time to cook at home.
Oh, yeah.
But also don't want to go out right now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure those businesses are doing pretty well for themselves. And
well, clearly.
Come to the rescue for a lot of folks right now.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And so far your experience has been pretty good.
Yeah. Like there's been at least three or four recipes that we've found that we've decided, okay, these are staples.
These
like,
are good.
We're adding this to our in-home recipe list, and I'll go out and get stuff as part of our other recipes. And
and,
we're
it,
to find
and,
out
and it wasn't like
stuff.
This really hard, you had to be a sous chef to do
no,
it. Like,
no, no,
oh,
no. They even give you great little tips. Like if you go in the app, like, and you pull up your certain recipe, it gives you cool little tips about how to like cut stuff.
And
one thing I learned was the proper way to peel garlic. You know,
bulbs. Oh,
like
there
if
you go.
You've got a garlic, you know, yeah. a clove of garlic.
Uh-huh.
The simple way to you know, peel it and get it ready for
you don't just bread. Smash it.
Well, you can. Yeah,
okay,
it's yeah. kind of what they're suggesting, but like you, oh. know, you don't have to like fumble around trying to peel it yourself or whatever. Like it's just cool little tips like that they give you to help you out with cooking too. So
all right, we're in. We're gonna start doing this. But I still want the report back on which one you like.
Too,
there you go.
So. All right. Well, Richard, thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Yeah,
today.
Great having you today.
Richard Carrier from CyberLink again, cyberlink.com/faceme if you want to learn more about the software. Thank you for your time, Richard. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a great pleasure.
Well, that does it for us. Until next time, stay connected. Looking to add interactivity to any environment? With a sleek, slim design that's built to withstand the rigors of continuous commercial use, Elo's 32-inch interactive display is the perfect place to start. Enabling up to 40 touches with fast, extremely sensitive response time and anti-friction glass to minimize heat as fingertips drag across the screen, Elo's 3203L with industry-leading TouchPro PCAP technology is designed with the user in mind. Using touch-through technology can be mounted behind a mirror, in a counter, or in a fully encased kiosk for added durability or aesthetics. To learn more, check out the link in the show notes or contact the Blue Star Elo team. Interested in selling RFID solutions but aren't sure where to start? Zebra has you covered with a full portfolio of RFID hardware and support services. With growing applications in T&L, manufacturing, healthcare, retail, and more, RFID improves supply chains, streamlines inventory management, and improves online order fulfillment. To learn more about Zebra's line of RFID readers and printers, visit the link in the show notes or contact the Zebra team at Broodstar.